Elizabeth Stranger peeled 3 boiled eggs under running water, dropped them into a chipped blue willow china bowl, and began to mash them with a fork. She took a quick puff on her cigarette, blew smoke out through the back window, and tapped ashes into the drain.
"Don't forget a titch of lemon."
The fluty voice that sailed in from the front porch through the open living room windows belonged to Liz's mother, Sorrel Woodham. Everyone, including Liz, called her Miss Sorrel.
"A titch of lemon," Liz sang back under her breath, directing her imitation at the dolls perched on a continuous row of shelves just below the kitchen's beamed ceiling.
Miss Sorrel had begun placing dolls there back in the day when she had no trouble hopping up on a chair to do so. Now Liz did the hopping for both of them, along with any light and heavy lifting that needed doing around the house. Miss Sorrel's dolls stared ahead, impassive, miffed perhaps that Liz never lavished them with more than perfunctory attention. At one end of the shelf were Victorian dolls, with bisque heads, creamy complexions, glass eyes, Cupid's bow mouths, and stiff wigs. At the other end sat bald celluloid baby dolls, placid and patient, their painted eyes forever open. Once a week, Miss Sorrel supervised as Liz climbed from the chair to the table so she could give each doll a thorough dusting. The kitchen dolls were not Miss Sorrel's best. Her Madame Alexander Alice in Wonderland, with a hand-painted cloth face and yellow yarn wig, was tucked in beside a pair of rare Cherokee rag dolls in a pair of glass china cabinets in the dining room, where the rest of her rarest and most valuable dolls resided. Also in a dining room cabinet was a shelf of porcelain dolls Liz's mother had made herself, Miss Sorrel dolls, as they were known to collectors. Their bodies were soft, and the legs and arms unglazed bisque porcelain. But their heads were why the Miss Sorrel dolls were considered art, albeit folk art. Each face was a carefully sculpted and painted portrait of a real child. The Miss Sorrel dolls were as valued for their eerily realistic features as for their scarcity. The first ones had been portraits of Liz and her sister, Janie. Though Miss Sorrel had long ago given up making Miss Sorrel dolls, she kept herself busy with the projects. Temporary residents, aged and injured dolls that had been brought to her to be repaired and refreshed. Those were carefully wrapped in acid-free paper and tucked into plastic bins, each doll cataloged and shelved in the workroom at the back of the house. There, Miss Sorrel worked with her longtime friend and next-door neighbor, Evelyn Dumont, to gently restore them. The women went through mounds of Q-tips cleaning them, restringing legs and arms, reweaving and sometimes replacing wigs, resetting glass eyes, de-stinking plastic bodies, and doing whatever else was needed while preserving each doll's authenticity. Binti, Miss Sorrel's aging Irish setter, wheezed hot doggy breath on Liz's ankles. Miss Sorrel used to brush Binti and save the dog's once rich, lustrous, strawberry blonde hair to make wigs for dolls. Liz tossed Binti a crust of bread and turned her attention to chopping celery and green onion. Added them to the eggs along with mayonnaise, a shake of mustard, and yes, though she didn't need to be reminded, a squeeze of lemon. She mixed it all together, added salt and pepper, then scooped a dollop onto a finger and tasted before assembling sandwiches, cutting them in quarters and stacking them on a plate, along with a half dozen strawberries she'd picked up at the Piggly Wiggly. Local berries wouldn't be in for another 8 weeks or so. Liz took off her reading glasses, anchored them to the top of her head, and carried the plate out onto the porch. It was an unusually warm January day, warm enough to sit out. A spectacular pair of camellia bushes bloomed in the front yard, one loaded with hot pink blossoms and the other white. The ground beneath the bushes was thick with periwinkle. In a matter of weeks, the air would be heavy with the sweet scent of wisteria that would hang from the sinewy vines that draped gracefully across the front of the porch. And by May, mosquitoes would be so thick that sitting on the porch would be a non-starter.
a police cruiser emblazoned with Bon Secours Police in peacock blue lettering across the side, slowed as it approached the house. Liz stepped across to block her mother's view. The cruiser window rolled down, and Deputy Police Chief Frank Ames waved.